I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. It's been in the news for the last several months. It's back in the news now. David Simon wrote a piece in the Baltimore City paper, another one in the Washington Post. This is the issue of whether or not when a police officer shoots a civilian, whether he kills that civilian or just shoots that civilian, should his or her name be released to the public? A new ruling by the city police department says no. They will not release those names to the public. And the civil libertarians and others are saying that this is a danger to our democracy not to have that happen. Police are arguing it's for the safety of the officers. The other side's arguing that what about the safety of our democracy and the citizens not knowing who does what in our city when it comes to violence, whether it's police officers or people in the community. We're going to talk about that, the parameters, all of that, with our guests here in the studio. We want you to join us here at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Joining us in studio is Anthony Guglielmi, who is now the new Director of Public Affairs for the Baltimore City Police Department, and Bob Chaley, the newly elected president of the Baltimore Fraternal Order of Police and a Baltimore homicide detective. David Rocha is with us, who is a staff attorney for the Maryland ACLU, that's the American Civil Liberties Union, and the man who started the ruckus in the press is David Simon, of course, creator of The Wire, author of The Corner and Homicide, and a former police reporter at the Baltimore Sun. And David, Bob, and Anthony, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thanks, Mark. Glad to be here.
Same here.
Thank you for having me.
David, can you hear us? David Simon? Do we have him up? All right, let's try to get... Yes, David, you there?
I am here.
Good, man.
I can hear you.
Good. We got you now. We can hear you, too. Welcome.
Okay.
Good to have you with us. So let's talk about this. I mean, we've had in I think the stats are right that I was reading online that last year police shot 21 people, 13 of them fatally, and the same number of people were killed by police in 2007. 31 people were shot that year, and those numbers were up from 2006 when 15 were shot and 5 people were killed. So let's talk first of all about, let me ask Anthony Guglielmi to talk about why they instituted this policy. Then I want to hear from David Simon about the gist of his article and what and why he wrote both in the Post and in the city paper opposing vociferously what just happened. Anthony?
Great, Mark. What we did is we really had to take a look at officer safety, and not only police officer safety, but the safety of the officers' families. And in this day and age, when so much public information is available on the internet, we really had to take a look at that. And we followed best practices from what other organizations across the or other agencies across the country do. And we've decided that in the instance where a police officer is justified, we are not going to immediately disclose the identity of that officer right after the incident. We need time for the investigation to go through its course, and you know, all the parties involved get to make their decisions, and then, you know, the police commissioner has discretion to use disclosure at any time. And you know, we just thought it's in the best interest of officer safety and the safety of officers' families.
David Simon, clearly from both your articles, you took serious umbrage at this as a shot against democracy. Talk a bit about your thinking on this.
Well, first of all, the notion that there has been any substantial threat to any officers or their families is non-existent. I've spoken to sources not only in the Baltimore City Homicide Unit, but in the state's attorney's office, which investigates these shootings and the aftermath of these shootings, and they cannot acquire a single instance in which any family has been threatened and in which any officer has been substantially threatened. There were moments in which Mr. Guglielmi had cited something to me about the Norman Stamp shooting as being indicative of an actual threat. I was quickly dissuaded from taking that seriously by the people who have those files. When we're dealing with something that is non-existent and a non-existent threat, and something that has not happened in Baltimore City, and we're pretending to weigh and balance that against something that happens routinely, which is the death of actual and harm coming to civilian witnesses, and yet the city is continually asking civilian witnesses to continue to cooperate, to continue to come forward, and rightly so. I mean, that's the only way you're going to get a handle on this crime problem is to maintain the trust of the community. What does it say to those witnesses, to those civilian witnesses, that the Baltimore Police Department, 3,000 strong, armed, you know, sworn officers, with the power of subpoena, with the power of arrest, who can get the state's attorney off the phone, if they do receive a threat, they can get an officer parked outside their house, these are the guys who are unable to give their names anymore because of safety? My God, why would anyone in Baltimore City in their right mind come forward and be a witness?
Let's take some of what David said here, David Simon, and ask you all to chime in and bring David Rocha and Bob Cherry into this conversation. Let me just lay something out on the table here. I mean, one of the things, when David Simon says in the articles that he's written and some I've been reading, when there have been threats against police officers, clearly, that you wrote about, that you talked about.
No more than in previous years.
What'd you say, David?
No more than in previous years.
No more than in previous years.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually down off of a couple of previous years when I checked with people in the department. But, you know, in any event, having 23 threats in a year against a 3,000-man force is a pretty modest number. And to have none of them acted upon in any fundamental way.
Mark, can I just jump in for 1 second? I think part of being an effective leader is the responsibility to develop proactive policies. And we cannot wait for an instance to happen and then second-guess ourselves at the end. We have to use, you know, intelligence available to us now. This day and age is very different from when David covered, you know, the police department. They didn't have cell phones back then. You know, today I can log on to Google right now. I can type in Mark Steiner. I can get a satellite photograph of your home. I can pull up an academic record. I can drive to your home. I can find out where your kids go to school. And it's very easy for me to target your family in an attempt of retaliation. And that's just, it's a day of life.
That's true for civilians as well. So perhaps by that logic, we should never have anybody face their accuser in court. Because once a civilian stands up in court, you can use all that technology as well. Are we a country where you face your accuser under English common law, as we have been for our entire existence? Or are we now a country so afraid of the internet and new technology that we no longer are going to abide by the fundamentals of English common law? You're allowed to face your accuser in public.
David, you have to balance personal security with the public's right to know. It's just, you know, unfortunately, it's the day and age that we live in.
But that's
not true.
There
is no balance in this policy.
Well, David Rocha and then to Bob Cherry.
Well, I mean, we can sit here and go back and forth from now until the cows come home about whether there is a meaningful threat. I have to say I find David Simon's arguments on this completely persuasive, and I think, with all due respect, that Mr. Guglielmi is overhyping the nature of the threat. Of course, you don't get to pull up a satellite image of where the person lives unless you already know their address. And when the police give out the names of an officer, they don't give out the officer's address,
right?
Quite sensibly.
Exactly.
And of course, right. And of course, every officer in the Baltimore City Police Department wears a badge on their uniform that has their name on it that any citizen of the city in Baltimore can see each and every time that they encounter that officer. And the fact that they're required to wear that badge is in the police department's general orders. We don't have a system of secret police in this country. But even more fundamentally than that, I think, frankly, that the police department's policy is simply ignoring the law. The information about who shot who is public information, as David Simon accurately pointed out in his articles. And it isn't up to the Baltimore City Police Department to rewrite that law and say, well, we don't want to give it out. The law treats... the law says that that's public information, and police officers, who God bless them for doing what they do, are no different from any other elected or appointed official in government.
And Bob, try to ask this question. You've been a police officer for how long?
15 years, Mark.
Okay, so, and you've been president of the union now for about a year. Sometime within the year you've been a president.
The last 3.5 months.
3.5 months, okay, sorry.
Prior to that, as a homicide.
Right. So, as a police officer, and you know a lot of men and women who served with you over these years, we've been able to find one case of an officer who has been shot, we think in retaliation, and he was identified when he was going out of a bar by the people who he testified against in court.
Detective Tommy Newman.
Exactly, Tommy Newman. There's been no real case of an officer being targeted or shot or gone after for using his or her revolver in the service of duty. So... well, why all of a sudden? I mean, you also know that as a cop, that people, there's already this wall in certain between police and community. People look at this as maybe making the divide even larger. Why do you think it's necessary?
Well, you know, when I talked to David on the phone a couple weeks ago...
David Simon.
That was the argument that he tried making as well. And jump in, Dave. But, you know, the way we look at it here is that the only thing that's changing right now, Mark, is the name of the officer is being redacted from the report and from the investigation. Nothing else changes. And when you talk about the trust with the community... Our police officers are out there every day and every night working hard to establish that trust. And being a homicide detective for the last 9.5 years, we're charged with investigating the criminal side, if there is any, when a police officer is involved in a shooting, whether on or off duty. As soon as an officer is involved in a shooting, they're transported immediately to the homicide unit, their weapon is surrendered, the investigation commences at that point, and it's a very intensive investigation. The state's attorney's office is notified immediately. The police commissioner and the command staff are aware exactly of who that officer is, exactly what occurred. And the public will get all that information as well, minus the name. And what we're trying to stress to the public is that nothing's changing here except the fact that we don't want to take that chance of having another Detective Tommy Newman get gunned down coming out of a bar or, for that matter, wherever he was.
Well, nobody wants that, but I do have say that... The notion that nothing has changed is just not right. Everything has changed.
That's right.
So when you withhold the name of the officer, you're withholding perhaps the most important piece of information. Because it, you know, essentially what Mr. Terry is saying, and I understand this, you know, officials say this all the time, is trust us. Trust us that we'll do a good investigation. Trust us that we know what the officer did in the past. Trust us that we have the citizens' best interests at heart. And, you know, that's all well and good, but in this country, we don't simply accept the notion that we trust our elected or appointed officials.
That's exactly right.
We have public information acts for a very important and particular reason, which is precisely so that we don't have to rely on the word of elected or appointed officials, so that there's an independent press who can verify it for themselves.
That's look, right. Mark,
David Simon.
The thing that is oversold routinely by the police spokesman and by Mr. Cherry in these arguments is that we are so secure without knowing the name because there is a profound and comprehensive investigation to make sure that the police officer has done no wrong. And that's just not true. And I'll explain myself in a moment. And I say that, and Detective Cherry will know this, because, you know, I spent the year in the homicide unit. I was on the inside of about 24 police shooting investigations. When a shooting is ruled justified by our state's attorney's office, and they will tell you this, and if you call Pat Jessamy right now, she'll tell you on the record that a justified shooting does not necessarily mean that there was good police work involved. You could have very bad police work involved. You could have a situation in which the officer has provoked the situation, made it more violent than it needed to be, in which procedures weren't followed, in which bad judgment was rendered. The only thing that is required to justify a shooting legally by the state's attorney's office is the following: that when the officer used lethal force, he or she thought at that moment that she was protecting, he or she was protecting herself, her fellow officers, or the public. They could have been wrong. They could have been entirely wrong. The situation could be entirely mismanaged. But if the officer acted without reckless endangerment in terms of their own state of mind, that shooting can be justified. So when they say we're only going to release it on the unjustified shootings, that covers a whole spectrum of incidents in which the public's ability to know whether officers are behaving properly in terms of their training, in terms of the manner in which they approach the situation, in which we got to the point of using lethal force, and that was the most necessary, it was entirely necessary, that's now disappeared from the public's ability to know. Moreover, by keeping the name, we can't go back and see if this officer has done this one time or 10.
But that's disclosed. I should just reiterate how it works. Can I do that?
What happens is
after a police-involved shooting, immediately after, the age, the race, the rank, the tenure, the assignment, and the history of the officer of whether he or she has been involved in a previous incident would be immediately disclosed. Thus, the name, whether it's Anthony Guglielmi, Bob Cherry, you know, Fred Bielfeld, the name becomes inconsequential because all the details for the position of police officer have been revealed. You know,
that's just not true.
That's just not true.
I mean, the most recent incident And David said this better than I, and maybe I should just shut up and let David say it.
Let me respond to that. And, I got it right at the end.
Do you want me to finish the policy, or do you want to debate?
Please, but you've already misstated your own performance in the shooting.
Let me just say, is there more to the policy you were saying?
Yeah. So then after – the investigation will take place. Upon completion of the investigation, if there is wrongdoing, the identity of that officer will be completely disclosed.
Right, but it shouldn't be up to the police to decide whether there's wrongdoing.
Court.
It's up to the citizens of the city of Baltimore to make their own judgment about whether there is or is not wrongdoing.
Exactly.
That's who the police in the city of Baltimore work for. That's who they're accountable to.
And we're not talking about trying it in the press. This is not...
Well, unfortunately, that's what happens.
Well, whether it happens or not, that's what living in a free society means. I mean, the press plays an important watchdog role here. But I want to say something more fundamental.
Let me just one at a time. I mean, David, Simon, finish what you're saying. David Rocha, then we'll go back to Anthony and bring Bob Cherry back in here.
Back to this policy, this wonderful policy that Mr. Guglielmi is suggesting he's put into place. I just have to say this. If we put Mr. Guglielmi's performance on this recent shooting involving Tracy McKissick in the Southeast District, if we compare that to his statement, we find that actually a situation in which there are grave questions, even among Southeast District officers, as to whether or not she handled herself properly in a prior incident in 2005, when we asked for information on that, we were told, quote, she was dragged behind a car. She fired one shot. The shooting was justified. That is all that the police spokesman would release. Now, in fact, she was not dragged behind any car. And, in fact, there were questionable aspects of that shooting that could not have been discovered unless you went back and looked at the full public documents, which you couldn't get if her name was not revealed. So what Mr. Rocha is saying is exactly right. We were in a situation where we had to rely on the authorities and the self-interest of the Baltimore Police Department to give a proper accounting of the prior shooting. And in this instance, and I think it's very telling, the police spokesman, I have to say this, did more dissembling and more lying than I encountered in 10 years working with Dennis Hill as the previous police spokesman. It was shocking to me how much dishonesty was involved in his recounting of that 2005 incident.
Well, that's the problem
with not having the name, is that you can't go and look at an independent source of information.
But, David, you don't know the facts. Today, let me give you the reality.
I know she was not dragged behind the car. And that's
so, I mean, I'm not here to, make documentaries or sell things or, television shows. We're here to protect families and police officers.
Do not go ad hominem. In this instance, I'm here to protect the public's right to know. That is my interest. I don't have an interest in a TV show.
Okay. Well, let me just finish, the policy. So today, we had a police-involved shooting Friday. The Baltimore Sun today requested reports from the previous two incidents where this officer was involved in a shooting. Those reports were made available to the Baltimore Sun. I don't know what you're talking about when we do not make those documents are public documents and we make them available upon request.
Frankly, you don't know what I'm talking about? When you made the previous McKissick document, when you sent that one over to the Baltimore Sun, you actually inked out the name of the suspect.
The name of the officer?
No, the name of the suspect.
Right.
The theory was that if you know the suspect,
then you can find the other documents that relate to this and thereby figure out the name of the officer. So this notion...
I apologize. That was an oversight on my part. That is not the case. We only redact...
It's not an oversight. It was a deliberate act.
You guys got the information. I'm confused.
Hey, David, let me throw this out.
Bob Cherry.
And I'm saying this, David Simon, directly to you because you were in homicide back in 1988. And you and I had this discussion 2 weeks ago when I was down in court. I think that the Commissioner Bierfeld's policy of not releasing officer names actually brings it in line with what we're trying to do with our witnesses to encourage them to continue to cooperate with the police and to show them that the police department is sincere about protecting them as well. And I know from, my 9.5 years down to homicide, and I learned from the men that you rode with, guys like Don Warden and Dave Brown and Bob Bowman. We do everything we can when a witness comes down after a violent shooting or a homicide to protect their identity, to get them to relax and to tell the truth about what happened. And that name isn't going to be released until we go into court. And I think that Commissioner Bierfeld's policy of not releasing an officer's name in a shooting actually is very similar in bringing that policy in line. And I know you and Dave keep saying
except
that...
Except the witnesses are merely witnesses. Bob. They're just witnesses. And there isn't a reporter. I never put the name of a witness in my story, even when I had it in my entire career. But understand, when an officer takes human life, even in the author, in the authorized performance of his duty, that is the ultimate verdict. That is a verdict being, and it may be a righteous verdict, but it's being delivered on a civilian using lethal force by somebody who is part of the state apparatus. He's not an innocent witness who just happened to witness a crime and is going to be testifying to it. He has made an overt act that has cost somebody their life.
You're right, and that's why the investigation is more intense, Dave.
We just went over what the investigation
Dave, but
is.
You know what? But what you didn't tell the public is that there's two sides of the investigation. You said that when Mr. Jessamy issues that letter of declination indicating that it was justifiable, and for the public that means that there'll be no criminal charges forthcoming.
That's all it means.
But what you neglected to tell the public is that the other side of the investigation that takes place when an officer is involved in a shooting is done through our internal investigation unit.
Those guys, right?
I don't want to be one of those guys. But there's still police officers, and they're charged with investigating myself and any other police officer who comes involved in a shooting to make sure that their training was in line, administratively they did what they were supposed to do, and if not, the department will take actions against those officers.
Well, it may or may not. And the point is that the role of the press is to document those cases where it did or did not, and to make an independent judgment so that we aren't simply relying on the good faith, good judgment, and good graces of the police department. Many times the good faith, good graces, and good judgment are well in evidence. But I think I'm sure you would agree that they're not always in evidence.
That's right. Let's let our listeners know that on the other half of the investigation, because I will go that far, after the criminal investigation is determined that there are no criminal charges, but they might refer cases that where they think, in any event, there will be an IID investigation of the shooting independently. However, the IID investigation, and any lawyer who's ever dealt with the city or the solicitor's office will tell you this, and you know it to be true, I imagine, if you're the president of the FOP, there is an incredible disinclination on the part of IID to have a finding against an officer in a justified shooting for one simple reason. If they do it, they open themselves up to having that discovered or acquired on discovery by the attorney for the family. And now the city has a liability issue. So the police department has an absolute self-interest in not finding against an officer, even if the officer did something that was contributory to the shooting. There is an absolute reason for the police department to lie to itself and to the public about this. And you still want to say that the public should have no oversight and we should just trust these very specific and very limited and self-limited investigations.
So let me just say that, Anthony, have a quick thought here. We're going to go to break and then open the phones at 410-319-8888 and get the callers who are calling in now to comment on the subject about whether or not police officers' names should be revealed who are involved in a shooting in the city.
I just want to reiterate, I mean, the Baltimore Police Department is not the only law enforcement agency that thinks that there's a serious risk to retaliation of police officers. And everyone keeps forgetting the family. You keep forgetting the wives and the children. And you said it's not possible to get an address from a name on the internet. And that's dead wrong. Because you can put my name into Google right now and you'll find out you'll pull my voting record and you'll pull my address. And I've done it before I got here. But anyway, what I want to say
voting record. They can't tell you who you voted for. They can't.
Where he voted.
Where yes,
you voted.
Correct. Where I voted. Right. I'm sorry. Right. The Washington, D.C. Police Department follows this policy. The Boston Police Department follows this policy. The New York City Police Department follows this policy. The Federal Bureau of Investigation follows this policy. The renowned Department of Homeland Security follows this policy. Atlanta Police follow this policy.
I can tell you another police department that also follows this policy. They police another city. They're known as Blackwater. Their friends are also in Triple Canopy. They police Iraq. They're accountable to no one. The level of shooting of Iraqi civilians finally reached the point where the government in Iraq begged the United States to take those companies out of there. That was a police department without oversight. If you want to lead by example, there are many other cities that have managed to keep this in the public domain and are doing just fine. And I would just like to hear the name of one.
But the nation's renowned departments, the one that everybody talks about, are the ones that don't.
Well, some of those departments are very different, and I think it's telling that no other department in Maryland has this policy. And in fact, the Baltimore City Police Department until January 7th, 2009.
Baltimore County has this policy. They use this. It's case-by-case basis they decide.
And Anne Arundel County released the information within 12 hours, and And Prince George's County does it within 24 hours. And L.A., one of the largest departments in the country, releases names right after the shooting.
By the way, there was a bad shooting by the FBI field office here in Baltimore down in Anne Arundel County several years ago.
In Pasadena.
And they tried not to release the name.
But they did release the name. I actually looked that up today.
It was wrong.
It should not be solely the police department's judgment about what's right and what's wrong that determines whether the name gets released.
Our elected officials. I mean,
it's not elected officials who are making this decision.
The state's attorney's an elected official.
But she's not the one making this decision.
Fred Bielfeld's not elected.
The state's attorney ultimately decides if a shooting is
justified
or not.
The state's attorney decides. I mean, David, you know, laid this out as clear as could possibly be laid out. What the state's attorney decides is whether the shooting is legally justified or not, which has no... which is a completely separate question for all the reasons that he articulated as to whether it's right or wrong, good or bad policing, good or bad policy.
I don't know. You elect our elected official, state's attorney, the mayor. They appoint their official. This is how the system of government works.
But the reality is,
an elected official cannot go against Maryland state law. If you wanted,
David,
to
nothing's against the law here.
That I disagree with.
That's why we have courts.
We're going to take a short break.
You may find yourself there.
let's talk about whether this is against the law. Let's talk about why the law was instituted and what the law may portend in the long run in the future. We're going to take a very short break here. And when we come back, we're going to open the lines. Russ and Greta, our first two callers up, as we are joined by Anthony Guglielmi, Director of Public Affairs for the City Police, Bob Cherry, who is President of the Fraternal Order of Police here, Baltimore City Chapter, and a homicide detective, David Rocha, staff attorney for Maryland ACLU, David Simon, creator of The Wire, author of The Corner and Homicide, wrote stories and articles in both the Baltimore City Paper and the Washington Post on the issue of whether police should... names should be revealed after a shooting. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression, and over 70 years later, they're still here to help people in difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com, and we'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we introduce our guests and start this conversation, there's two things I want to remind you. One, one of our underwriters is the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. And for information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And also remind you that if you go to our website, steinershow.org, you can hear an interview we did today with Philip Mayer, who wrote this incredible new novel called American Rust, one of the best things I've read in years. And he may be one of those Pulitzer nominees, I think. You can meet him tonight at the Ivy Bookshop at 6 p.m. where he'll be reading from his book and signing copies of American Rust. You can go up on our website and see pieces of our interview and listen to the interview in its entirety. It is an amazing novel. But let's get back to our discussion of the moment here on the show here on the Mark Steiner Show. We're talking about whether or not a police officer who is involved in a shooting, whether the shooting is lethal or not, should have their names released to the public immediately, or released to the public. It's always been the case in Baltimore City. That rule was changed in January, and we're discussing today about the consequences of changing that rule. We're joined in studio by Anthony Guglielmi, who is Director of Public Affairs for the Baltimore Police Department. Bob Cherry is president of the Baltimore Fraternal Order of Police and a homicide detective for 9.5 years. David Rocha is staff attorney with the Maryland American Civil Liberties Union. David Simon is creator of The Wire, author of The Corner and The Homicide, and was a police reporter at The Sun and wrote a cover story for the Baltimore City Paper and a piece in the Washington Post on this issue. 410-319-8888 is the number here. You can join us also by writing us at steinershow@gmail.com. And once again, let me say, David is here not because he is a creator of The Wire or a producer or director. He's here because he's weighing in on this issue as a journalist. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones and we'll get to our guests. Russ in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your guests.
Hi, Russ.
What prompted this call today, Mark, was one of your guests was talking about trust of the police department. and that this is an issue that revolves around such trust. But if you want to really get a picture of how well trusted the Baltimore City Police Department is, and I say, because in my own personal experience out there, seeing them in the streets every day, they well deserve one. Go to the courts and look at how their testimony is treated by jurors. No one has any trust for the police department because of the way they operate. They're very aggressive. They're very in your face. I was pulled over the other night with a taillight out and kept on the side of the road for 45 minutes while they were smoking and joking. What else was going on? I don't know. But my point is that for this police department or any other one to succeed, it has to become an integral thread in the fabric of the community. It has to get to know the community, and the community has to get to know them. To hide behind these kind of policies where you don't know who does what and no one can be checked out just by the public itself. I don't need the mayor. I don't need Jessamy. I need to know by being able to research things myself what's going on, I think is another mistake on the part of this department. If you want to look at the model for cleaning up suspicious or questionable police shoots, just look at what John McNamara did out in San Jose in the early to middle 80s. I was there. And this guy came in, and in a matter of 2 months, and it's a city much like Baltimore, only the colors are different. There's more Latino and Asian out there.
Right, right.
As far as the gangs back here was black and so forth. But he did a wonderful job of cleaning up San Jose. And maybe one day Baltimore reached the point where economic development dictates that it become a safe city so that we can start looking at those kinds of people and those kinds of practices. But I think that it's wrong on the police department's part, okay, to just sit back and think people are going to trust them because we know you too well for that. I'm sorry.
Russ, thanks for your call. Bob Chair, let me jump over to you first here. I mean, and in light of that, I mean, if when there are difficult issues with trust between the police and community, and we know that exists in Baltimore as it does in many places. Friday night, we talked about during the break, there was a police-involved shooting in Pimlico. The man who was shot died this morning.
Last night.
Last night. And another man was arrested at that same time. And so when the community doesn't know why the officer did the shooting, who did it, the son doesn't have the staff to write about it in any depth anymore. Doesn't this kind of really extend and expand the issue and the lack of trust we have in the police department?
Well, I say no, and I understand Russ's frustration with being pulled over. Even as a police officer right now, if I get pulled over, I feel uncomfortable because no one wants to be stopped by the police. But if you had a taillight out and the police stop you, and they're running your record, and they're checking your license plate. I mean, they're going through the motions. But you know what I think is really interesting, and it goes back to the when we first started the conversation today, Mark, when you mentioned to your listeners, you know, is this a danger to our democracy? What I find interesting in Baltimore City is that, and I hope, Dave Simon, you would agree with this, because you rolled with our guys for a year back in 88. I think the real danger to democracy isn't our police officers who go out there and put their life on the line. Why is it that last year we had, what, 21 police-involved shootings, and we had 200-plus homicides, and, what, 500-600-plus non-fatal shootings? And yet, you know, a lot of the talk goes right back to the police. You know, let's blame the police officers for everything. And I think that our officers have worked hard over the years to continue to bridge that gap of trust between the community and themselves. And they're still doing it as we speak here on the radio. And I just think that, you know, the listeners and the citizens of Baltimore, and I want to say that, like you, Dave, I live in the city, and I've lived in the city since I moved down from Boston 18 years ago. I love Baltimore. And I think that I'm not saying that every officer out there does a perfect job. They don't. And that's why we're increasing
our
training.
The public has a right to know
but
which ones are good and which
ones
are not.
You're right,
good.
Dave, but why is it, though, that we have 200-plus homicides, we have 500-plus non-fatal shootings, and yet here we are, we want to discuss the 21 police-involved shootings over the course of 2008.
Reason we want to discuss this is because there's been a change in policy now that has been so dramatic and so different from the history of the department that it now requires us to discuss this. If you'll remember, Bob, before I did happen to write a 500-page book about homicide in the city of Baltimore. But at that point, it was not necessary to talk about the police response to police shootings because the policy was honorable and just. And they were not trying to hide behind some veil of secrecy.
So, you know, you're talking, if you're talking to me about that, I'm not attuned to the violence, or I'm not writing about the other violence and only about police shootings, you're really talking to the wrong guy.
But, Dave, you know what? You're also saying the wrong thing when you say we're being dishonorable, which is the opposite of what you said, honorable. There is no one hiding here.
And that's exactly what you're doing, Bob.
But how is it, okay, if we were hiding, right, then a police officer who gets involved in a shooting takes off running like the thug on the street does when they shoot someone up in Pemlico. That's the person that's hiding. That's the real threat to democracy, wait. Dave. Not the police officers who go out there and put their life on the line.
Let's speak anecdotally. Let's speak about what this is. For 100 years, the Baltimore City Police Department has been able to, when they shot a citizen of Baltimore, they've been able to stand behind the body and say, I, Officer so-and-so, did this. I was justified. I will explain myself. I will go through the process. And you, the citizens of Baltimore, can rely on the fact because we have transparency. For 100 years, that's been good enough until this administration decided, without any other incident ever being attributed to the public's right to know, having cost an officer or his family any violence whatsoever, has decided to change the policy.
Technology,
David. You know what? Ben Franklin would have had an answer to your very flippant use of technology, because the technology is there for anybody to misuse against civilian witnesses, too. And we all have to stand...
But civilians don't shoot gang members.
Ben Franklin would have said to you the following.
No, they testify against
them. Benjamin Franklin would have said that those who would trade a little bit of freedom for a little bit of security deserve neither. And that's what you're doing here. You're trading on our freedoms as citizens for the little bit of security that you think you're going to get. And the truth is, you deserve neither. It's dishonorable, and it's an institutional act. It's cowardly.
Before we go back to the phones, I want Anthony to have a chance to come back, and then David Rocha had something to say, too. Then we'll go back to the phones, and Greta and Bruce are the next two callers up. I mean, let's respond to what David is saying. I mean, if there's no, I guess he's arguing, that there's no evidence-based reason for this policy. There's nothing that says an officer has been attacked,
no.
Shot.
Only what's in Mr. Guglielmi's imagination of what could happen theoretically to an officer or his family if all things went wrong. And these are things that are happening to civilian witnesses routinely.
So let me ask Mr. Guglielmi to comment on that.
First of all, that is a risk that I am not willing to take. And again, I think we keep forgetting family. I stand behind the fact that the amount of public information available on the internet today is quite concerning. We're in a day and age where
families who live in the 1400 block of Dallas Street or the 1500 block of West Fayette Street.
Let me finish his thought, David, for a second.
I mean, we're in a day and age where you can literally track people on their cell phones. Google Latitude is now a new service where you can track somebody just by using their cell phone.
But they have to consent to it. I mean, you know, like...
David, it doesn't... The risk
look,
is there.
I mean,
the
you
vehicle
know, you,
is
you
there.
You have arguments to make, but you shouldn't just make up facts.
I'm not making
okay?
up facts.
Well, you are. I mean, you know, I know what Google Latitude is, and the person who owns the cell phone has to specifically consent to whoever knows where they are. So
right.
To say that that's somehow a reason to do this, I mean, it's not just fantasy. It's downright not true. I mean, I think we can have a reasonable, rational debate on this without resorting to things that are simply not true. But I want to say something else. I want to respond to something that Mr. Cherry said, because I think it's important. You know, the argument was made that the true threat to democracy here is people who go out and commit mayhem and kill people, the criminals. And at some level, I agree with that wholeheartedly. The people who go out and murder people in this city are a huge threat to not just to democracy, but to any of us being alive. And I recognize the force of that. But then the assertion is made that somehow by focusing on this, we don't care about that. And that's what bothers me. Any time... I repeatedly get involved in discussions about all forms of police behavior, and it's almost a cliche that every time you have one of these conversations, somebody somewhere is going to say, you don't care about public safety, you don't care about the police officers, you don't care about their families, you're some pointy-headed know-nothing who cares about everything but those things. And there's something that I find deeply disturbing about that, because it's an attempt to avoid having the discussion rather than actually having the discussion.
You're here.
And let me say one other thing about that. While I agree that the actions of murderers and criminals are a threat to democracy, we respond to that by having an entire state apparatus devoted to holding them accountable. And the point I would make is that police officers, like any other public servant, also need to be held accountable. And the way we hold people accountable in this society is not by relying on the good graces of the police to do that. We hold people accountable in this society by having a free and independent press that reports what it believes are the facts about what is happening, and it is the people themselves that then make the decisions about whether and how elected officials should be held accountable. And so when Mr. Guglielmi said earlier, well, there's elected officials making these decisions here, so you can trust them. But that gets it just so backwards, it's sort of impossible for me to think that he really believes what he's saying. The only way you hold public officials accountable is if the press is doing its job and reporting all of the facts, and then people can make informed decisions about whether the elected officials are doing their job. And with this policy, they can't do that.
Who's to say that the press is a fair voice?
Who's to say
it's bias in the media has been discussed for? I mean, I'm a journalism major.
Well, like it or not, and that's why there are competing voices in the media.
There's not competing voices in Baltimore.
Oh,
so you think because you don't like the press that you can therefore withhold the information to the citizens of Baltimore?
We're not withholding the information. Well, we are giving them all the information.
This whole policy is about withholding information.
No,
I mean,
sir.
You've painted yourself into a corner.
No, sir. We release all information pertinent to the position.
But it's
of
what you
officer.
Think is pertinent, and what everyone here is telling. What I am telling you is that. The name of the officer is pertinent because without the name of the officer, there's no way to know.
That's incorrect. Let me
open the phones and let our listeners bring this back in here.
And David, I just want to make a quick comment. We're not against an open and free press, but I was speaking to Dave across here, but also Dave Simon. When you say that, we're not holding police officers accountable, but we are. I mean, the investigation is conducted by the homicide unit. It's conducted simultaneously by the Internal Investigation Unit on the administrative side. There is a civilian review board now in place in Baltimore City. The state's attorneys are reviewing both the administrative and the criminal investigation that's taken place. So,
you're repeating yourself.
I have to repeat myself when Dave across from me says that police officers aren't being held accountable.
Allow me to repeat myself by saying those investigations are not geared to having the most open and free investigation of whether or not the best possible police work.
But that's your interpretation. Dave, why don't you write a story then on the ineptitude of the Internal Investigation Unit?
Excuse me?
Why don't we write a story on the ineptitude of the Internal Investigative Unit?
A lot of things. But
my point is, why do we...
The first fundamental of writing any stories at all is to have a free flow of public information. When you start covering up, stuff starts going bad a lot faster. You're going to have a lot more police shootings, and they're going to get worse if you guys insist on operating in the dark.
Let's see what our listeners think at 410-319-8888. We've been holding on patiently here to join this conversation. And Greta, in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Greta. The reason for my call, I was listening to your information here, and my son was killed August the 12th of 2006. He was 14 years old by a Baltimore City police officer. What I don't understand is my son, I called for assistance with my son at 9:30 a.m. that Saturday morning. My son was shot and killed by this police officer. By 2 o'clock that afternoon, they were holding a press conference to say that the officer was justified. My information, my son's information from kindergarten, pre-kindergarten on up to his present grade was out in the press. My son's body was not released to me. I had to wait because they needed to do drug testing and other types of testing on him. There was no type of testing done on the police officer. If my information, I'm an upstanding citizen, been working on my job for 19 years, and if my information was out in the press, my son's information was out in the press, the officer's information should be out in the press. I am for officers who are doing their jobs with integrity, but the ones who are not doing their jobs with integrity, it is unreal on our police department. My son was killed in Southwest Baltimore. During that time, there was a lot of dishonest activity was coming out of that police station. And since then, I still do not understand our criminal justice system to the magnitude of an officer can kill a civilian. Instead of them asking my community for information as to what did they hear, what happened, they were going around asking them, what kind of mother was I, what kind of child was my son, to dig up information regarding my family negatively to protect the officer. I believe that their information should be out, as well as the public's information is out, whoever was killed at that time. And I feel that there should be more training on our police force, because there's not. I feel that they should. I grew up with officer friendly. The officers now, they come into our area with urban warfare. This is what happened at my home that day. I can't save my son. He's gone. I just want to make it better for other families who did not have the, or don't have the fortitude to stand up to fight. My son, after he was killed, it was ruled by the state's attorney's office that evening, the same day of the shooting, a justifiable homicide. How can you possibly say a homicide is justifiable and you never did a proper investigation?
Well, great. Let me get our panel here to respond, and I'm also sorry for your loss. And I'm glad you got through. The question is, I think what Greta is coming down to is a question we keep coming back to in this issue, is in a democracy, if someone is shot or killed by a member of the local or United States government, why shouldn't the citizens in that community and this country know who did the shooting and know that it was justified in a larger sense beyond the police saying it was justified?
Mark, can I speak to that, please?
We can. Then let's go around the room. I won't ever have a chance to talk to that. We'll go you and then Bob Cherry, then Anthony, and then David Rocha.
All right. In this country, under our laws, you have a right to face your accuser. That means that if people stand up and bear witness against you in court, or if your jurors stand up to say that you're guilty and should be incarcerated or punished, you have a right to know who they are as citizens. They don't do it in secret. We have no star chamber. Well, ultimately, an act of the police officer is authorized to use lethal force on the street in certain situations, as he or she should be. But ultimately, you have to look upon that as almost the most basic verdict of government against a citizen. It's deciding that we need to use lethal force, in effect, the death penalty, at this instant to preserve the common good. And what the police department is now saying, incredibly, in the face of, you know, 1,000 years of English common law, is they're saying, you don't need to know your accuser. You don't need to know who the accuser was. And they're not saying it. They're pretending they're saying it for the officer's safety, but I find that to be incredibly offensive, because the truth is, in these neighborhoods, people know who the officers are. And the word gets around in the neighborhood. That's how I found out the name of Tracy McKissick, the officer involved in this previous shooting.
From the neighborhood.
Yes, of course. The neighborhood knows, and the family will know the moment they hire an attorney. They're not going to be able to keep it secret from the family of the victim. The people they want to keep it secret from is the public, because the public might then become engaged in the process of judging whether or not these decisions were the best possible decisions at the moment. They would like to avoid that scrutiny, and so they shield themselves shamefully in the idea that they're protecting officer safety, when in fact, no officer's safety has yet been threatened in the city of Baltimore. It's appalling, and it's embarrassing, and I'm ashamed for all the good police officers in Baltimore City. They're now covered by this very embarrassing policy.
Bob Cherry, and we can hear from Anthony and go back over to David and go back
to our
phones. I'll
touch a little upon what Dave Simon is saying and then what you were saying, Mark.
Yep.
And Dave, you know, you keep referring to the word secret, you know, hiding, you don't need to know. You make the assumption, but Dave, you know what, you and I respect you, and then I think you're incredibly in tune with a lot of what's going on in the city. And also to Greta, you know, our sympathies to you on the loss of your son, but I find it also hard that they ruled that shooting justifiable the following morning, because in my entire career at homicide, there are so many reports that need to be, written and taken from the firearms unit and elsewhere, that it usually takes months before Mrs. Chesamy finally rules on whether it's justifiable or not. But Dave, you keep talking about all these secrecies and everything. You make the assumption that the police officers go in there as though we're the bad guys and we're immediately after a shooting looking to cover it up.
I make no assumptions.
But you keep using the word secret, dishonorable. But Dave, you use the word secret, you use the word dishonorable. And now you're saying you feel bad for the officers out there who work hard, you know, is because now when an officer gets involved in a shooting and we choose just not to release their name, that's the only thing that's being removed from here.
That's a fundamental fact. That it's not just the name. The name provides you with the total history of the officer. And that history is something the public has a right to know about.
But David, we provide that. I'm struggling here. We provide you that.
You provide your sanitized version.
Negative.
You proved yourself to be a liar.
Listen, that was redacting the suspect's name. I admit it was an oversight. That should not have happened. The only name.
But to call something an oversight is to say that something was, that you did it by accident. You can't redact a name by accident. It was not an oversight.
It was an oversight.
An oversight is a an accident.
Anthony,
that was done intentionally.
David, I'm answering. So the question is, I apologize for redacting the name. In the future, the only name, David. If I can just finish,
okay. Sorry, you can't.
Well, wait. Let me get his thought out.
Okay, just one second, David. Hold on. Hang on. So. The information of the previous incident will be released. The only thing that's redacted is the officer's name.
That's not true. You lied about the previous incident involving Tracy McKissick.
No, David, I
didn't. When the chips were down, when this new policy was about to be challenged, when you had to rise to the occasion and give people, as you would say, the full facts but just not the name, you had her being dragged heroically behind a car. She was never dragged behind any vehicle whatsoever.
Well, the question I have is this.
Lied.
I mean, If the idea of the policy is to protect officers, there are two questions about this. I mean, A is that if David Simon, whoever else in their investigations on the street, can find out the name of the officer, Tracy McKissick, in this one shooting where a 61-year-old man was killed, then anybody can do that. So withholding the officer's name really doesn't protect the officer. In the way you're describing it.
There's something more fundamentally wrong with that explanation also, Mark, which is that the so-called policy, as Mr. Guglielmi has explained it, is that if the police department deems the shooting not justified, then they will release the name of the officer. But, of course, if there's this ostensible threat to the officer, the threat exists whether the officer was justified or not justified.
Of course, It shows that the justification is nonsense.
So Bob, in all the years you were a homicide detective, and this law has now come, this ruling has come to pass in January from the police department that you work for. I mean, I've never heard any other head of the FOP before you, or maybe even you when you were an officer, anybody else was an officer, say, we think that our names should be not given to the press. So why all of a sudden...
Well, I think like Anthony said, I think when Anthony and the police commissioner called the FOP and asked what we thought of this issue, you're right, in the past, the FOP never stood up and said, hey, we need a policy change. But, at this point, the FOP agrees with the police commissioner and Anthony that we can't take the chance of anything happening in the future.
Okay.
And that's all we're saying here. I mean, again, Dave, I respect the work that you do, and I know that you, like I said, are in tune with what's happening on the street, but... Don't underestimate, and I know you don't, how hard the police officers are working to create that trust, because they are.
Well, Bob, it's because I have complete respect for good police work.
That I know you do.
I wrote a 500-page book and continued to cover the beat for 13 years.
I know you do.
Okay, so don't throw the idea that I don't understand police work or don't respect good police work. But let me tell you what the wages of this are going to be. And the police department has a real hard time connecting its own behavior with the result. And I'll go back to the fact that you spent the last few years when somebody, it was the policy of the police department to make a lot of mass street arrests. Now, I know this because every time we would stop filming in East Baltimore, one of my crew or one of my actors would end up at central booking on non-existent charges, and we'd have to go get him out. He'd never really be charged with anything. But he'd be there with a lot of other regular people, sometimes shopkeepers, school teachers, people who were your jurors. And so what the caller Russ was saying earlier about, do you want to look and see the damage that you're doing to your own level of trust? Look at your jury pool and how disbelieved, unfairly disbelieved, A lot of the police testimony is in Baltimore City Circuit Court.
What?
Why? Because if you keep locking people up on non-existent charges and jacking them up and sending them to central, down to the detention center, when they come out and you ask them to be jurors, they're not going to believe an honest officer. Well, if you decide that you're not going to identify officers who shoot civilians because they might be in danger, then what are you going to tell the witnesses when you say, oh, but you won't be in danger? Please testify in this murder case we have.
David, I have to interrupt because I think you actually ended up having the last word for today because we are out of time. I want to thank David Tumman for taking your time today on the phone with us, and David Rocha, Bob Cherry, and Anthony Guglielmi for being here today. And Bob Cherry, thanks for your service on the streets of Baltimore.
All right, thank you.
And good to have you all with us. And thank you all for writing in and calling in. Sorry we couldn't get to all your calls, but it was an intense conversation here on the airwaves. Thank you all.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This month, the Urbanite unveils the Urbanite Project, its third annual experiment in the power of unconventional collaboration. Urbanite is available in print at over 800 locations around the region and online at urbaniteBaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Jessica Phillips and Justin Levy. We're engineered today by Jamad Jones. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional new interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.